Hello and welcome to the TaxCast from the Tax Justice Network. I'm Naomi Fowler. Coming up later, we look at efforts on a local level to stop tax dodging companies bidding for public contracts.
The staggering issue is that just in England alone, there's $45 billion a year in public procurement of goods and services. At an EU level, it's $2 trillion a year of procurement, which is basically 250,000 public buyers out there across Europe at any one time.
But first, here's a very quick roundup of tax justice news for this month. As of January 2017, European Union member states must automatically exchange information on all new cross-border tax rulings they issue, the agreements they make with companies. Will it really bring to an end the kind of secretive agreements we saw between Luxembourg and multinational companies? We'll see. Also in the European Union, Malta now holds the EU rotating presidency. It may be the EU's smallest state, but it helped multinationals avoid €14 billion in taxes from 2012 to 2015. But who's counting when it comes to hypocrisy? Leaked diplomatic cables have shown that when he was Prime Minister of Luxembourg, the now EU Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker repeatedly blocked EU efforts to tackle tax avoidance by multinational companies. And while we're on the subject of hypocrisy, the tax haven of the Netherlands has said, apparently with a completely straight face, it'll block any post-Brexit trade deal the EU might make with the United Kingdom if the British government continues on its race to the bottom on fiscal regulations and corporate tax rates. Good luck with that one. In the United States, it looks like President Trump will be kicking off his administration with a big golden tax break for US corporations. He proposes a 10% tax rate if they bring their offshored wealth back into the states. Companies that have been the most aggressive offshore stand to benefit the most. Companies like Apple, Microsoft, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs. Nice. And finally, US Senator Elizabeth Warren is filing a bill this month that could make impeachment of a US president easier if he or she fails to declare conflicts of interest between their presidential role and their businesses. If the bill's passed, it will invoke the not very well-known Emoluments Clause of the US Constitution, which forbids presidents from accepting gifts or favours from foreign actors. And those are the headlines. Now we're going to talk to John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network for his take on this month. Okay, John, so the United States has got a new president, President Trump. One thing I'm not really holding my breath on and expecting him to tackle is the role of the United States in blocking global progress towards better transparency. And this is a hangover from Obama, who also failed to tackle this properly and move the United States into the 21st century on this. The United States is one of the only major countries not to have signed up to automatic exchange of information, where countries exchange information, banking information on each other's citizens through what's called the Common Reporting Standard. Now, the United States always keeps pointing to its FATCA measures, which is the way it tracks its citizens overseas, the Foreign Accounts Tax Compliance Act. Trouble with that is it's not reciprocal. It's a one-way street. Great for them, not great for the rest of the world. And there's been an interesting report that's come out about this. According to this new report on the Common Reporting Standard, there are 24 loopholes. The report's very blunt and it says, well, really the OECD shouldn't even bother trying to fix these 24 loopholes until the United States agrees to implement the Common Reporting Standard, because fixing those loopholes would accelerate even further the already massive flow of money going into tax haven USA. Are you expecting President Trump to be addressing this anytime soon?
Oh boy, no, none whatsoever. Now, look, the Common Reporting Standard is a huge leap forward in theory when compared to its predecessor. The previous standard was known as Information Exchange by Request, and it required permission from the courts of secrecy jurisdictions around the world before information could be exchanged. And needless to say, that system didn't work. So the Common reporting standard makes new provision for information to be exchanged automatically between countries, and it covers a wider range of income than the previous standards, all of which is great. But, as you've just said, the Common Reporting Standard, which has been designed by the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development in Paris, when it comes into operation, it's clear that there are major deficiencies. And the biggest deficiency of all is called the United States of America. Now, the United States has opted for its own standard, which they call the Foreign Accounts Tax Compliance Act, and it's proving incompatible with the Common Reporting Standard. And the result is that the United States is refusing to cooperate, and top-end tax evaders from around the world are now closing their offshore accounts held in other jurisdictions and migrating across to the United States. And the tax evaders are getting away with this because the financial institutions who support them, banks and accounting firms and lawyers, are encouraging them to shift to the United States in order to circumvent the Common Reporting Standard.
Right, and the report actually says over 80% of people wanting to, and I'm quoting, wanting to avoid the Common Reporting Standard simply move their accounts to a US bank, custodial institution, trust or fund. Great, job done.
Job done, and of course, some states in the United States, South Dakota has been identified as a particular player in this area, are reaping a bonanza in trying to attract this tax-evading capital. Now, the United States isn't the only player who's undermining this. Switzerland also should be mentioned in this context. They've signed up to the Common Reporting Standard, but they're undermining the standard generally. But the biggest problem on the block globally is the United States. Another gaping loophole in the Common Reporting Standard relates to what is now known as residence planning. Under automatic information exchange processes, banks and financial institutions are required to provide information on income paid to residents of other countries. This requires them to identify that client A lives in country B. But the new game in town here is for the clients to buy what is known as a synthetic residency. It sounds as dubious as it is, in order to appear to be tax residents in a completely different jurisdiction, a place which is prepared to sell residency to rich evaders in return for a minor fee or investment in property. Places like Dubai, the Bahamas and Panama. And many financial institutions are actively advising their clients to take up this resident by investment dodge. In practice, what is happening is that the rich tax evaders buy notional residence in Dubai or the Bahamas, but don't actually live there, of course. Dubai provides a certificate of residence, which is shown to the bank or the financial institution, and they record that their client is resident for tax purposes in Dubai, when they know most likely this isn't the case. So when information is provided by the banks to the tax authorities, it goes to Dubai rather than the true country of residence. So the Common Reporting Standard is a step forward from the previous system, but some secrecy jurisdictions are prepared to completely undermine the project. Most importantly, the United States, which is determined to become the world's largest tax haven, with Britain snapping at its heels.
Right, and speaking of the United Kingdom, there is a very important bill going through the British Parliament called the Criminal Finances Bill. Some interesting aspects to it, among them unexplained wealth orders, my favourite bit in the bill, as well as some mechanisms for holding enablers of tax dodging to account. They're actually pretty small fines, but it's an interesting advance. And what's really significant is that the British Member of Parliament, Margaret Hodge, has tabled an amendment to this bill that would force British satellite havens to create public registers of the real owners of companies, something they've been refusing to do. That would apply to the overseas territories of Bermuda, the British Virgin Islands, Caymans, places like that. So great. But this won't be extended, unfortunately, to the Crown dependencies. So that's Isle of Man, Jersey and Guernsey. We're not sure why that is. So when's this bill likely to be passed into law?
Well, the bill's going through its second readings and is likely to be passed this year, 2017. And it's getting a lot of support, cross-party support, in both the Commons and the Lords.
And so that's both houses.
That's both houses of Britain's Parliament, so three chairs for that. And in theory, this is very innovative, could be transformative, but require a big commitment to resourcing. That's why we have reservations. If they're not properly resourced, in other words, they have highly experienced professional investigators and lawyers and prosecutors, then they won't be effective. So let's start with your favourite unexplained wealth orders. As everyone knows, huge amounts of criminal money, billions annually, flows into London and is invested into all sorts of assets, properties, yachts, artworks, shares, gold bullion, football clubs.
Newspapers.
Newspapers, indeed. Now, the adoption of these unexplained wealth orders creates a new dynamic in the criminal investigation process and prosecution because it reverses the burden of proof and requires individuals to open their books and demonstrate that their property has been derived from legitimate means. So, transformative. You can imagine the situation where a dictator's family sets up a company in Britain and launders hundreds of millions through that company to buy properties in Mayfair and Park Lane. Now, in the past, prosecutors would have needed to demonstrate that this wealth originated from criminal activity. Now, the table has turned. The dictator's family will need to show how they came by the wealth in the first place. So the burden of proof has changed. In order to make these orders work, they'll have to put some serious money into, first of all, building up investigative capacity, helping the prosecutors to proceed with legal cases that are very often long and drawn out, not to mention costly, and in generally demonstrating that they mean business.
So enforcement and investment.
Absolutely.
Investment in enforcement.
Now let's turn to the other provision of the Criminal Finances Bill. New offence, criminal offence, of failing to prevent the facilitation of tax evasion.
Mm-hmm. That's the one that's aimed at the enablers of tax evasion.
Correct.
About time. Good.
Something we've been campaigning for a very long time. This provision targets the legions of professional advisers, the bankers, the lawyers, accountants and others who we have always called the enablers. Under the new provision, companies will be held liable if an individual employed or even a subcontractor who acts on their behalf facilitates tax evasion. So it's the companies that are liable. Specifically, the company will be held criminally liable if they don't take reasonable steps to prevent tax evasion. This is a major advance on the previous provision, which only made a corporate criminal prosecution possible when the prosecutors were able to prove that the board of directors were aware of tax evasion and involved in its facilitation. So this is, again, turned the tables. This is a progressive step and one which the tax justice community will welcome, but its effectiveness as a deterrent will depend on willingness on the part of prosecutors to take on some of the most powerful players in the tax evasion business. And that includes too-big-to-jail banks like HSBC.
And too-big-to-jail accountancy firms. Too-big-to-fail accountancy firms.
Well, too-big-to-jail and too-big-to-fail. So, you know, it's great to have a statute on the books there. It looks great and so on. But to move beyond a window-dressing exercise into actual practical application requires a huge amount of resource and determination at political level, at the level of the prosecutors, and at the level of the investigators.
So we'll see later this year. We'll report back on that on the TaxCast. Not so good this month in the UK is what's been going on around Brexit, which is the vote to leave the European Union by the United Kingdom. The British Chancellor has been giving interviews to the German media, threatening to push the UK much further down the road of tax havenry, regulation light, labour law light kind of economy. This kind of threat that Britain will use its position post-Brexit to create a sort of Singapore of the European Union is really ill-advised and really worrying, isn't it? And we did predict it.
Yep, we have been predicting it for some time, But I think it's much, much worse than a Singapore or a Switzerland of Northern Europe, because it's not just on tax matters, it's on regulation, social protection and so others. So now it's out in the open, and I think it comes in the form of a veiled threat from the British government to its European negotiating partners. If you don't give us generous trade concessions during Brexit negotiations, don't make concessions, above all on freedom of movement of labour, we'll engage in this race to the bottom on tax, on social protections and on environmental protections, in fact, across the entire board. An astonishing exercise in self-harm by the British. Now, the question is, as a development strategy, will this actually work and for whom? But the vast majority of British people, let's call them the 99%, will lose out as their public services are cut further, as social welfare programmes decline, and as environmental standards are further degraded. So at the end of the day, engaging in a race to the bottom is a loser's strategy. It's a sign of weakness on the part of the British government, because after all, who on earth actually wants to win a race to the bottom?
And if the UK does come out of the single market, which the Prime Minister said is her intention, we're opening the door to even more kind of corporate subsidies and sweeteners, because the government's pretty much given a nod and a wink to big business and said, don't worry about the tariffs, guys, we'll cover that at great public expense.
Absolutely. It won't just be the tax cuts, as you say. It will be subsidies. And of course, we don't know what the deal is around the Nissan subsidy. That hasn't been publicly revealed. But a lot of other big manufacturers in aerospace and other areas will, of course, be asking questions about this. It's not even clear whether these subsidies represent illegal state aid. They might well be illegal.
Whether it's under EU rules or possibly under World Trade rules as well.
That is the question. Will the World Trade Organization now take this on as an issue? Because this race to the bottom is taking capitalism into entirely new territories. Frankly, madness, because there is no limit to the amount of subsidy that big companies will chase if they're given the opportunity by weak politicians.
Thanks, John. John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network. Now it's time for the TaxCast special feature. Sometimes it can seem there's so much money and powerful interests tied up with corporate tax affairs, financial secrecy and tax havens that there's not much we can do as individuals. Well, remember the slogan, think globally, act locally? This month, the TaxCast looks at efforts on a local level to stop tax-dodging companies bidding for public money for providing us with goods and services. In Spain, politics has been shaken in recent years by corruption scandal after corruption scandal. These people are calling for the Prime Minister to resign after it turned out his party treasurer had a slush fund in secret Swiss bank accounts.
Right now, there is a huge reaction of public opinion against tax fraud and tax evasion and tax dodging through tax havens, you know, due to all the scandals that have been in the media.
This is Miguel Alba of Oxfam Intermon in Spain.
The involvement of different politicians in corruption cases that had links with tax havens, I think that brought the opportunity to launch this initiative.
And the question is, how do you create the possibility of hitting those indulging in dodgy tax practices where it really hurts? Well, they've set up an initiative called Zona Libre de Paraísos Fiscales, Tax Haven Free Zones. The idea is to work towards implementing a no-tolerance of tax dodging system at a local level aimed at companies wanting to bid for public contracts. So that's companies paid public money to provide public goods and services at the municipal level, city and regional level, or a local council level, as we'd call them in the UK. So companies bidding for cleaning, transport contracts, books for schools, healthcare services, things like that, all part of public procurement processes. Miguel Alba.
We know that the public sector in Spain, I mean all the public procurements and all the economy that the public sectors move in Spain is around 1/5 of the total economy of the gross domestic product. So it's 25% of the total economy of the country. So we think that it's a really huge economy of the business in Spain, that we are sure that the companies don't want to take the risk to lose it.
I bet they don't. So far, you've got about 28 cities signed up to the Tax Haven Free Zones initiative across Spain. So tell me how you set it up.
First of all, we analyzed the initiative and how it was possible to make a link or how it could be included in the legal framework of procurement in Spain. After that, we saw that the best thing to do was make a step-by-step way of working. And so in all those municipalities that are engaged right now with the initiative, what they have done is they have declared themselves as a tax haven free zone. It is a commitment to make all the relevant changes in their procurement policies to include this initiative, to include the criteria to penalize companies with links to tax havens.
This initiative is a work in progress. So far, Barcelona's the first city to have completed the process of enacting the legislation, so all eyes are on what happens there. And the Spanish government's currently working on a national procurement law which should strengthen this initiative further. Here's Paul Monaghan of the Fair Tax Mark in the UK.
The staggering issue is that just in England alone, there's $45 billion a year in public procurement of goods and services. At an EU level, it's $2 trillion a year of procurement, which is basically 250,000 public buyers out there across Europe at any one time.
And it just can't be right that a company using tax havens or other means to reduce its tax bill, which pays for the very public service contracts they're actually bidding for, can then undercut companies that don't operate that way. In Britain last year, the Fair Tax Mark teamed up with Christian Aid to launch their own campaign called Sourced. They take a bit of a different approach to the Spanish one, but they're also trying to set up systems that could bar tax-dodging companies from bidding for public contracts, goods and services. For the Fair Tax Mark, it's a natural extension of the work they've been doing.
People now increasingly understand who the bad guys are, your Apples and your Facebooks and your Googles in terms of tax avoidance, but there was no way to identify who the good guys were. What we did is create a certification scheme, much like you have for fair trade or organics. It was a ethical certification scheme, and it was designed to certify people who were paying the right amount of tax in the right place at the right time.
So far, 25 businesses are proudly displaying their Fair Tax Mark. And they're not only social enterprises and cooperatives, but also some very large FTSE-listed companies and private businesses. Anyway, Paul, you've been working hard on this other campaign, which is aimed at weeding out tax-dodging companies bidding for public service contracts at a local level in Britain. So what's the difference now for companies bidding in those locations where they've implemented these new rules as a result of the campaign?
In the first instance, you would have to now self-certify that you had not been found guilty of tax avoidance either in the UK or elsewhere. And if you won the contract, that claim would be checked. The only way you could get through that would be if you could demonstrate, if you were found guilty, would be that if you were found to have self-cleaned, they use this term self-cleaned, where if you've been contrite and made remedies.
Self-cleaned, I like that. The problem, as we know, is that enforcement is such a problem. So few companies actually are prosecuted or even really challenged on their tax affairs. And the UK, like many other countries, just isn't investing enough in its tax authorities. In fact, they've been cutting back on staff. So many companies could quite honestly claim that their record is clean and go ahead and bid on these things, couldn't they?
Yeah, and I think there's a challenge for us collectively. One of the blocks I think we've identified is some of the councils have got halfway along that journey and said, right, I'm ready to go. Help me identify the businesses who are proven tax avoiders. Give me the list. Show me the database. And I can't help them with that yet. That's going to be a challenge for everybody in Europe. I'm hoping maybe when this goes out, there might be somebody out there who's got a whiz-bang idea to solve that.
Obviously, implementation in the future of full public country-by-country reporting would help this when it comes to multinational companies, at least, bidding for public contracts. So, I mean, we'd know what they're really up to in each jurisdiction where they operate and how much tax they're paying and where. And I'd imagine the information we might get from that could well disqualify quite a number of the really big companies straight off the bat, and that in itself would create quite an interesting new challenge.
I would like to see a world where some of the software providers, if it was possible, such as Microsoft, and the hardware providers such as Apple, potentially not being able to operate on those public procurement contracts. And the quid pro quo would be businesses that were trading ethically could start to pick up the contracts that were being vacated by the tax avoiders.
That would be nice to see. In the meantime, tax authorities in each country do keep a record of the few prosecutions there might be, so hitting them and the courts with freedom of information requests could be a way to get together some data for a kind of roll of dishonour for tax dodging companies. It's a challenge. But as in Spain, this is a work in progress, and the best friend for strengthening such campaigns is turning out to be the 2014 EU Procurement Directive, which EU member states were supposed to have integrated into their legislation and enacted last year, which is probably still something that's in progress in some countries.
About 5 or 6 years ago, I think a number of advocates around Europe dabbled with changing public procurement and then believed they'd hit a legislative block. They believed that there was legislation at an EU level and at a country level which made councils take an action against tax avoiders illegal. Now, that certainly is not true now, particularly since the advent of the 2014 EU Procurement Directive. Now, what that directive actually said is not only do we not want member states using their public procurement focused on price alone, we actually believe procurement is an excellent policy instrument to advance social and environmental concerns. And one of those issues is actually tax avoidance. And so they actually built some criteria, little known criteria, into that 2014 procurement directive, which stipulated that it was mandatory to exclude businesses that have been found by an administration or a tax authority anywhere in a major country to be tax avoiding. They should be mandatorily excluded from public procurement contracts.
And you say at first the British government interpreted this EU directive by deciding to apply questions on tax for companies bidding only for contracts worth £5 million and over. But after a lot of campaigning, they seem to have realised that just wasn't good enough. And that's perhaps an example of how pressure and action on a local level can impact on policy making nationally.
Our UK government has now issued a new, what we call, public procurement note, which is mandatory guidance to all councils in the UK, which actually stipulates that all councils now in the UK must ask these questions, including tax avoidance questions, right down to low-end contracts of €200,000 equivalent. But The way the words have been drawn up in the EU legislation are actually quite useful. It's not necessarily asking for a criminal conviction.
And Brexit or no Brexit, that's now built into British law, which can potentially help the campaign out on the ground.
So we've got a situation in the UK where HMRC, our tax authority, are saying they have managed to identify and claw back 2.5 billion of tax avoidance. Yet, we also know only one prosecution has ever been progressed in the UK in this area, although there's been about 70 civil court cases.
One idea that's being floated is trying to move towards a system that invites multinational companies, at least, to report on a country-by-country basis voluntarily in order to be able to bid for public contracts. Companies awarded the Fair Tax Mark have done that. Paul Monaghan.
What we found is, as our businesses go to the forefront and say, not only should this be done, it can be done relatively easy, that then emboldens, we found, politicians to say, you know what, if these businesses can do it, country by country report involuntarily, why can't anybody else do it? If these businesses can do it and the roof doesn't cave in, why are we told that it would happen elsewhere?
And don't forget that with tax justice, things like environmental and social responsibilities are never far away. Back to Miguel Alba.
In Spain, there is a huge discussion in many public administration about including social clauses in procurement policies, not only tax related, but also, for example, related with quality of the employment or also environmental issues. I think that if we can make a European or a global movement fostering tax responsibility or social responsibility in general from public procurement policies, I think that is a really transformative tool for getting changes.
As I said before, it's a work in progress. It is about building a movement from street level upwards. It's about slowly squeezing the space in which tax dodging companies can operate. Once legislation is built into the way we do these things, that can be built on and strengthened. And it's about changing cultural attitudes too. Tax dodging is an antisocial activity, and it does hurt real people and real communities. That's it for now, and thanks for listening. We'll be back next month.